Okay, shit show dudes, you can tune out. This is for my fellow shit show ladies. Are you going through perimenopause or menopause? I'm not quite there yet, but I know that I have plenty to look forward to. Feeling like a wet sock driving down the highway. Night sweats. Poor sleep. Feeling tired all the time. Bloating. Gas. Man, can't wait for this shit. Now, if that is applicable to you, then you have to try Hormone Harmony. So Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through perimenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 fucking seconds, okay? Now, Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work. Now, for my younger shit show women like myself, if you struggle from that vicious week before your period, you want to crawl out of your skin, experience cravings, want to eat everything in the damn house, you feel a little bit down or off, well, Happy Mammoth also has a product for you to make it easier to manage your PMS with their Estro Control. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code adultchild at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code adultchild for 15% off today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Welcome back to Shit Show Saturday. We have Shit Show Beth. So what song do you want played when you walk into a room?
This is kind of going to expose like my dorkness. I would say, actually, I don't even know. I think the song is called Believe by Cher.
Yeah. I can. Have you ever heard my impersonation?
No.
Okay. I'll have to find a video.
What am I supposed to do? Sit around and wait for you. Well, I can't do that. Oh, there's no turning back. I need time to move on. I need love to feel strong.
I performed it one time. We were still on Patreon, but yeah, I can kind of do a share. Carbohydrate.
Oh, cake.
What kind?
Carrot cake. I love a good carrot cake from Wegmans. Also, I love like a cheap Betty Crocker. Yellow cake.
Okay, cheese.
Stinky cheese.
What kind?
Gorgonzola.
Okay. And condiment.
Probably mustard.
A plain, a Dijon, a honey.
Spicy, like the kind you eat with like a bratwurst.
Okay. Would you say that you had an adult child bottom? Is there a moment in which... My usual question, that you realized that your child had fucked you up a lot more than you thought it did.
Yes. But at the time, I didn't recognize that as the moment. So I would say, and I sort of alluded to this recently, my mother was visiting. This is also really interesting. My parents like to take separate visits. They're married, but they like to take separate visits when they visit their adult children, which is children who are grown, which is now I see it. So my mother visited, and it was 3 months before our wedding, and she made some inappropriate comments about my wife's mother. And
your wife?
In front of my wife. And I didn't know how, I didn't appropriately respond to it. Like, I didn't back up my wife. I didn't do it. I froze. I completely froze. I didn't understand the conflict. It became this triangulation moment. And then it was rather interesting coming out of it, because I really focused on like trying to repair things with my parents and trying to fix the relationship between my parents, me, and my wife leading into the wedding. And the things that my parents were saying, like my dad would call my wife and say, like, if you want to be a part of this family, you're going to contact Mrs. Landgraf and apologize immediately. Like, previously she was Nancy, suddenly she became Mrs. Landgraf. And then coming out of the wedding, I went no contact for about a year, but that was like a 5-month decision to go no contact. And that was the first time I stood up to my parents. So I didn't notice at that time that that was the bottom, but that was the bottom.
Did you communicate the boundary to them or did you just stop talking to them?
I communicated the boundary.
And how was it received?
I don't know how you could do this to your parents. Mm. Everything that we've done for you, no one's ever going to love you like we do. You're making the wrong decision. And then it was not respected for the first couple of weeks. Like they would contact me and I would not respond. And then they
got the picture.
Yeah.
Let's backtrack. Paint the picture of Beth's childhood.
So I grew up in a like a upper middle class nuclear family type lifestyle. What I didn't understand is the amount of energy that my parents put into crafting like what they considered the perfect image. So presentation and image mattered so much. Do we have the perfect outdoor decorations? Do we have the right porch furniture? Are we on the Christmas tour? Do we have the right outfit? You can't wear that when you go out to the, you know, grocery store type of stuff. So there was a lot of attention on perfect image. It was very much a environment where they were the parents and we were the children and we were not allowed, or especially me, I guess I should say, my brother's 2 years older than me. I was not allowed to have an opinion or a voice. I distinctly remember this turning point I should back up. So in fourth grade, my father was having an affair with my music teacher. And we were told that. I was told that from my parents. And
you remember that, like how it was presented to you?
Not entirely, but I do remember that she lived right near the softball field and I played softball at the time. And like after practice or something, like he would take me to her home. And then I just remember like being there by myself, like, oh, just lay on the sofa and read. Like, it was really strange. Like we weren't like, that wouldn't be like a home that I would go to. I didn't understand. And her children were older. So it was just strange. This isn't a family friend. Like, why am I at this house? Like, it was just very odd. And so between fourth grade and then fifth grade, I had this teacher who I remember my mom used to say to me, I don't know what Mrs. Young is doing to you. What happened to my sweet little daughter? I think that Mrs. Young was just teaching us how to have a voice and how to find our voice and how to find ourselves and who are we? And that was considered, you know, disrespectful, back talk, stepping out of line. I wasn't obedient any longer. And that was really problematic for my parents, especially my mother. At that time too, they put me into therapy and I didn't understand. And so I was stubborn and I didn't understand. So I said, okay, well, I'm going to go and I'm going to sit there and I'm not going to talk. And I didn't. I went and sat and didn't talk. And the therapist just sat and looked at me. And that went on for probably a month or so where there was no talking. Wow. I don't really remember exactly how it ended, but I guess my parents gave up like, okay, she's really willful and she's not going to talk.
And that was just because you started to speak up more?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Talk yeah. About and then, you know, almost everything my brother did was great and perfect.
Were you guys close?
Not at the time. Uh-huh. No, but he wasn't difficult to parent. He was, I don't know, he was really social, had a lot of friends. And so I was just the problem. And then I'd say the way that I'd kind of capture my middle school and high school days is that it was really about who my mother wanted me to be. And my interests were pretty aligned to what she wanted me to do. So much so as the college I went to my freshman year, she selected. I remember like I got waitlisted at like my top choice and she like sold me. Like I remember the phone call where she like sold me on like, you have to go here. I went to American University in DC my freshman year. And she's like, you have to go here. And these are all reasons. And it was like, so not the right school for me. And she decided what I was going to major in. Like it felt normal. Like I didn't know that wasn't, you know, like, and I wasn't, she was somebody who in her mind, she really tried to protect me from like disappointment or feeling rejected. But that what that looked like was like, I wasn't invited to the, I went to a small school. I wasn't invited to the, like the after prom sleepover at, you know, the Megan's house. She was having everybody, you know, and my mother in turn, like, called her mother, and it was never like, there was never, well, Beth, how do you feel about it? How do you feel about not being invited? There was, I was never asked how I felt. It was, how did the event or situation impact my mother? And then she reacted for her, for what she was feeling. Yeah. So, and then it was in college when I really started to, and again, not having the awareness around it, but at least like started to make decisions that were my decisions and not just in the path of what she had like predetermined for me.
And that didn't go over well.
I think that, so at this point we're now in like post 9/11 time, and my brother had been ROTC in college. And so now he's graduating college. Everyone, you know, that's in that whatever is now going to Iraq. Mm-hmm. And so he was deployed to Iraq. And that set off this like insanity within my mother of, she's the victim because her son is at war. And she had this life-size like cardboard cutout made out of him, or made of his like portrait or whatever, profile, whatever. And she used to bring it to events, like my cousin's wedding. My brother's not at my cousin's wedding because, you know, he's at war. And so she would bring him and he would like sit at the table. It was
when he posing pictures. Was yes. he posing him? Did you put your arm around him? Okay. Yes. I want to see one day.
Oh my God. I'll see if I can
get one. That's amazing.
Oh, she had brought him in the car with her. She
would put a seatbelt on him.
Yeah. I don't know. Probably. So
wait, was it a life size?
It was up from, it was waist up.
Oh, he was paraplegic?
Yes.
She like pushed him around a little wheelchair. She's like, oh, he's a wounded warrior.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's great. Did your dad think it was weird?
I don't know that my dad is allowed to like not support her. I don't think he's allowed to like say.
Beth, I think that's one of the best stories we've ever had on shit. I love that.
Really?
That's oh so my good. God. That's right up my alley.
Oh
that's
my God.
Weird, funny shit. I love it.
The best part is he's in his like, I might use the wrong terminology, but he's in like his army blues. Like he's in full uniform.
Did your brother know?
Yeah, he knew. He knew.
Do you guys ever laugh about that now?
We do now. Oh, he's like, it's so fucked up now. I think at the time he was, so what's interesting is, so she's going through this whole like, oh my God, everyone feel for me because my son's at war and he could die. And I'm like, hey, by the way, I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then.
How did that go? Did religion play a role at all in your home growing up? No,
not really. Okay. No, which is interesting though, because my mother was raised Catholic and my dad was Lutheran and we were raised Lutheran. And we used to go to church and Sunday school because like, that's what you did in the town that we grew up in. And I mean, she is not Catholic. And like all of a sudden, you know, something would go wrong. And she's like, I gave up my religion for you, Buzz. And it was like,
so now she has a son, a cardboard son and a gay daughter. Oh my God. Poor woman. The poor woman.
Poor woman, right?
How did that go over?
Not well. It was like this. I remember some of the first conversations were, she used to say to me, you know, well, I was really close with my girlfriends in college and I had such good relationships with my girlfriends, but that doesn't mean that I want to like date them. And I was like, yeah, because it's not the same. Like, right. And then it was like, oh, I remember this one so well. It was, what do you mean? Like, don't you want to be with somebody like your father? Like, oh my God, the dude who cheated on you with my music teacher, we can't talk about it. Also, by the way, like I found out from my grandmother that he was previously married that we also can't talk about. Like, no, I don't actually want to be with somebody like my father. And I had this belief system that I didn't believe in coming out. I didn't. I was like, oh, straight people don't come out. Like, I don't need to come out. I don't need to do that. So it wasn't something that I never really had a conversation with my dad. My mom found out sort of by not planned. So I was at the time like 2021, you know, and then my brother after the first deployment, then he goes to Afghanistan, then he goes back to Iraq. So that's taking us all the way through like my mid to late 20s. Mm-hmm. And it was a tenuous relationship with my parents because I was gay and because my mother was obsessed with
her son being at war. Yeah. What was the dynamic like between your parents? I mean, obviously not great, but how did they interact with each other?
It was highly conflictual growing up. They fought all the time. I don't know what they fought about. And then they really didn't know how to, well, I shouldn't say that. The way that I learned to repair conflict was to move beyond it. We don't talk about it. And I think I've either heard you say this or heard, I've heard this on the podcast before. It's like, as if you wake up the following morning, as if nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's exactly how conflict was between them, between me and my parents, but also during the conflict, or I guess coming out of it, it would be, there was silent treatment. There was really tense, awkward space. Don't talk to me. And it was a really like an eggshell environment. I didn't know how, you know, what the response was going to be. One thing that was kind of an aha moment for me when I was starting EMDR, I remember the therapist asking me, like, you know, growing up, who was the parent that you went to? And I said, my room. Like, I went to my room and isolated myself and found comfort and solace, like in my dolls, and created a lot of make-believe settings. Like, I played school and house on my own a lot and just hold off from my family and my parents. But that wasn't, you know, nothing could be revealed outside the front door. So nothing was discussed. Nothing was talked about. We needed to present as if we were a perfect, happy family with, you know, two kids and a dog and living in this little non-diverse white suburb.
So how did the laundry list items start to show up for you?
So I would say that the primary way that it started showing up for me was in my really unaware attempts at, I guess, addressing conflict in my relationship. I had no awareness around how controlling I was, how anxious I was, how I tried to. I distinctly have this memory where it was the first Christmas that we had, my wife and I had bought our house and were in Target choosing the Christmas lights. And it was like a 3-hour production for me because I was so obsessed with having to find the perfect Christmas light. And that the house was going to look perfect to the point where I was like paralyzed about, like, it's a fucking Christmas light, like nobody else cares. And that played out in so many ways throughout the relationship. And what I didn't know is, so my wife's an adult child of an alcoholic father, and she hasn't really claimed it fully, but you have. She went along, although when I first met her and she had an ACOA book and I had never heard of it at that time. And I was like, what's this? And she's like, don't read that. She went along with the dynamic. Like, we created this really unhealthy dynamic where neither of us had our individual independent identity at all. And I had no idea how to repair conflict. So I just moved on. I was constantly seeking validation from external sources. I had no sense of self-esteem. I was a workaholic. I had sought, sometimes I laugh because I say the one thing that my parents raised me to do is that's the only thing I actually did. It was like, oh, go out and become successful, whatever, you know, however that was defined by them. And it's like, that's the only thing I did. That's the only thing I knew how to do. I built a career, but I didn't have any idea how to have personal relationships. I had no idea who I was outside of work. I became really egotistical at work, which was very similar to my father. Yeah. So I think in the coming out of that after the wedding, that's when I really started to see things, but I didn't really own it, I'll say. Then during when COVID started, I was at first furloughed and then I was laid off and I was at home and I just didn't have any structure, didn't have any routine. I was undiagnosed ADHD and I was a disaster. I was spinning, spiraling around everything. I didn't understand how much I had to achieve something each day. Like, that brought me so much satisfaction and fulfillment, and not having a job to do that and not receiving that praise from my job. It was just a mess. And then I sought the ADHD diagnosis, and then it was through the work I did on with ADHD coaching that I discovered the unresolved trauma. And it was right around the time when I joined Kristen's program. We were working, my wife and I were working with an ADHD couples coach. And as she was getting to know us, she asked me, oh, you know, have you experienced trauma in your life? And I said, no. And my wife was like, I don't think that's true. What do you mean? And I was like, well, I've never been raped. You know, like that's what I thought. And I just thought there was big T trauma. I didn't know anything about, you know, emotional neglect. And so it's really been 2 years that I've been doing this work, I'd say, in a way that I feel really aware about. And it's been interesting how I was sort of working when I was really doing active like ADHD coaching, I was really working on some of the more, I don't know, on the surface symptoms of ADHD, and came to discover and own really that the emotional dysregulation and the way I felt about myself was so much more of a problem.
Complex trauma. Yeah.
Yeah. The complex trauma was really the foundation of it all. And okay, like I'm a little my inbox is disorganized. Like, okay, like that's fine. I can figure out, you know, some tips and tricks for that. But that's when I shifted to the adult child work.
Was it hard for you to fully accept that what you had experienced was trauma?
All right, my shit show ladies, let me tell you about how I can make getting dressed so much easier for you. Armoire is a clothing rental membership where you get to build your perfect wardrobe with brands that are high quality, unique, and recommended just for you. All you gotta do is take a 5-minute style quiz and then select from your personalized closet. The styles show up at your door in as little as 2 days. Then when you're ready for new clothes, just swap them out for more new to you styles. So I love this because I'm on video quite often on interviews and social media content, and I don't want people to be like, is that the only shirt that this girl owns? I also would not consider myself in the know of what's hot and what's not. But with Armoire, I get to pretend like I'm a fashionista. So this is perfect for working moms, for stay-at-home moms, for any women who just don't feel like going to the store. Now, right now, you shit show ladies can give Armoire a try and get up to 50% off your first month. So that is up to $125 off. Just visit armoire.style/adultchild. That is armoire.style, armoire.style/adultchild to get 50% off your first month and never worry about what to wear ever again. Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? So Katherine Heigl, you know her from Grey's Anatomy, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says that she's seen more issues with dog joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to improve any dog's health: their food. So what she's discovered is that the way many dog foods are made can actually create toxins that could be wrecking our dog's health. But fortunately, she has found that by just adding a few special superfoods to her dog's food, she saw huge transformation in their health. And she has made a 20-minute video explaining step-by-step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their dog's health. Now, y'all know I'm a cat lady. Y'all know that Kiki is the queen of the shit show here. But I watched this video and there's actually some things that I can apply to her health. So hopefully she'll live another 15 years or so. So go to badlandsfood.com/adultchild and watch Catherine's video. Again, that is badlandsfood.com/adultchild. Do you know how many times I have set the intention that on Sunday, I'm going to get up, I'm going to plan my meals out for the week, I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to get everything that I need, I'm going to come home, I'm going to make all my meals for the week? Do you know how many times I've actually been successful in doing that? Not once, folks, okay? Not one single time. But alas, I have found the perfect solution. Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your damn door. You get to pick and choose what you're in the mood for every week. Maybe one week you're feeling Mediterranean, maybe another week you're feeling a little carb consciousness. I like the sound of that. I most recently made, it was a spinach and strawberry salad with steak. It was damn good. So go to sunbasket.com/adultchild today to save $120 across your first 4 deliveries. That's sunbasket.com /adulthood to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order.
Yes, because coming out of the no contact with my parents, we started having my mother and I specifically started having some conversation around, she had some curiosity around how did I feel. She had some awareness around, okay, maybe I wasn't the mother that you needed within every moment of your life. You know, maybe there are things I should have done differently. But through that, also, there was still this undercurrent of, we gave you every opportunity, so you had such a great childhood. And I believed that. I felt really like gaslit and brainwashed by that, but believed it. So yeah, I had a lot of difficulty accepting it because it felt like this disloyalty towards them.
Mm-hmm. Of course. And how has your brother been impacted, and what have conversations looked like between the two of you?
So my brother's been impacted because of the way that they are inserting themselves and not, you know, just being really boundaryless with his two children. And so she's 9 and their son is 5. So I'd say probably about 3 years ago. So my niece was 6 and their son was 2 or so. And that's really when it started presenting in a problematic way. And I think really, and I've talked about this with my sister-in-law, that I don't know that my brother really noticed or would have responded had it not been for my sister-in-law to say, like, this shit is not okay. Like, it isn't okay how there was issues with, like, my dad, like, didn't put my niece, she was probably 3 or something, like, he didn't put her in the child seat properly. And my brother saw it and he was like, hey, like, this isn't the proper way to put her in the child seat or whatever. And my dad was like, how dare you tell me what to do or how to correct that? Or you think I don't know how to raise children? I raised you. And it was just like completely, it was so out of control. And so my brother is in this space where it's interesting because they were living in England. And so the thing I'll add is that my brother then proceeded to spend 20 years in the army and retired from the army just this past spring. So he's still completely perfect. The only thing that he's not perfect about is that he decided to get out. So they were stationed abroad. And then when they came back, they were stationed in California, and then they were in DC for a while, and they just moved to New Jersey. And so they're about an hour from my parents, and they're in a place where they are like, it's convenient to have built-in babysitters. And they didn't have that because they lived in England, then they lived in California, then they lived in, like, they didn't have family around. So now that they do, they want to embrace that. That comes at a cost. And so mm-hmm. That's presented conflict within their marriage. And I'm a resource for my sister-in-law. I'm actually more free and comfortable talking with my sister-in-law about it than my brother. But it's when he decided to confront them and share with them shit that they do that's not okay, he came to me and asked, like, how did you do it? How were you okay with their reactions? He's not in a place yet where he accepts that this is who they are. This is the reaction you're going to get from them. Like, he's still hopeful that mm-hmm. they're going to.
He's going to be able to get through. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's been a really interesting turn for us because I'm the little sister who was bullied by him and his friends. And to now be this, like, trusted advisor for him when it comes to my parents' relationships. And it's really largely because I did it first. Mm-hmm. I stepped out against them first. So that brought us closer together. But it's also been really hard. When I visited him and I've observed him having this emotional flashback, he was like yelling at his daughter. And she and I she reminds me a lot of myself when I was her age. And I had this emotional flashback of my dad and the way he rejected her. And she ran up to her room and sat in the corner and was playing with her dolls. And I mean, at the time, I think she was 5. I went up and consoled her. And the things that she said, it was so heartbreaking. And I saw myself in her. And I had to step away. And I said, I'm going for a walk. And I left their house. And I It was very, very hard. And I confronted him about it and had a conversation. Like, I'm concerned. Like, this is why I don't have a really great relationship with dad. And it looks like you're creating that with her. And he was able to receive that, which has been I think it has been really healing. It's been really healing for me. So yeah. Yeah.
Give me some examples of ways in which you can see your growth.
I think probably one of the biggest ways that I can see my growth is that I can almost now, like 80% of the time, I'll say I can pause.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not nearly as well, I guess. No, I am triggered, but I can pause and I can check in with myself and know what my need is rather than like immediately impulsively saying like the meanest shit that's coming from a very different part of myself. So I think that that's probably the most impactful growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, one thing that I'll share that I've gotten out of group is that, so I wouldn't have considered myself to have like, I think I would have said I have like very low empathy and compassion, and hearing other people's stories and what they've gone through and what they're going through has impacted me in a way that I don't think I ever could have expected. Mm. And it really has helped with my perspective of, I guess it's, I don't know. I was so dramatic about everything. I was so like stayed, like, I don't know. I just couldn't get a grip on anything of myself. And I just like stayed in it and spun and spun and spun, or like needed to tell everybody about the whatever's going on in my life. And what I realized is that created so much spin and drama and excitement, but then I was seeking all this validation from other people on like, oh my God. And now I don't really, I think that when I can just, okay, that happened, that sucks, I don't feel great about that, but I don't need to like run and tell anybody, or I need to run and tell the right people. And I think that I'd say, I guess some of the growth that I really noticed is that I used to have this very, like, I believed that my relationship should be everything. I should have all of my needs met from my primary relationship. My partner should be everything to me. I should be everything to them. And if I choose to, or if she chooses to process something with somebody else, or if I choose, like, that's not okay. And I think that a lot of my growth has been just having a much healthier sense of, I guess, what is a healthy relationship? What does that look like? You don't have to process everything with your partner. You don't have to tell them everything. You don't have to like, and I felt like that was like being disloyal and mm-hmm. like I had to, yeah. So, you know, and I guess the other thing I'd share is this is pretty, pretty meaningful. So we've had two separations, and one of them being bigger than the second one. And the first one was when we were seeing other people. And it's interesting because that relationship went on for about 5 months. And I thought, like, I really felt when I was in it that I was making this decision between, do I go be with that woman or do I figure out my marriage? And when I was coming out of that, and when I was noticing, when I was really trying to do the work on what was I getting out of it, so much of what felt, or so much of what I got out of that, is that she took care of my inner child and took care of little Beth so well. And she was like the parent and loved me the way that a parent hadn't and didn't. But I thought that it was like the perfect love. Like, oh my God, if we're actually together, this is going to be the perfect relationship. And it wasn't even real life. I mean, she lived in New York. Like, it was not real at all. And, but I thought it was so perfect. I'm never going to find love like this. So the growth in it is that ended. And then last summer, my wife and I were trying to repair things. And then coming into Christmas, she was like, I want to be separated again. I don't want to see other people, but we're going to be separated. And she was like, I'm sure you're going to call Jamie. I'm sure that's, and I didn't. And I just dealt with it on my own. And I never had done, like, I have always been in a relationship. I've always run to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when I really thought we were breaking up, I was in a place where I really didn't think I would survive. I felt like I had nobody, and I could not envision like uncoupling and moving on without, this was going to be like, this was how my life was going to look with her. Mm-hmm. And I noticed through the winter, once I was a few months into your community, I noticed that I was starting to feel like, okay, if this ends, which it was becoming more clear that it wasn't going to end and that we were building a healthy relationship. But I do feel pretty confident now that I, if this ends, like actually believing I will be okay. And it will suck and it'll be hard, and but I will be okay and I can do it. And it doesn't mean that I'm, you know, I used to think, oh, it means I'm a failure or I suck or I'm never going to find somebody or I'm always going to be alone. All this stupid shit that's not true. And I actually do now believe, like, or I know that none of that is true.
It's huge.
Yeah, look at that. That was a lot of growth that I just shared.
That's a fucking lot. Can she see the change in you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm much calmer. I'm much less reactive. I was in a place where I perceived I sort of had created her into both like a blend of my parents. And especially during COVID, I was in this period of, we were in this horrible chapter of everything she said or towards me, I perceived as a threat or an attack. Mm-hmm. And then I went after, and I made her the enemy, and we were enemies for a long time. And then the other thing too, in that, and I didn't realize this because this wasn't the dynamic that I had been role modeled to me. Like I thought fighting was about winning, mm-hmm. not like being a team. Like if you win, I lose. If she wins, like somebody's losing, if there's a winner, like I didn't. And I just went into every conflict with like, I have to win this. And I battled up and suited up for all of it. And I now looking at it, like I really did like go into this whole other frame of mind. It wasn't my adult self. It was the 10-year-old, the 14-year-old, the 17-year-old, like going up against my parents, mm-hmm. and trying to prove and show that I was misunderstood and I had to convince you that you were wrong.
It's like that projective identification, right? Like you're going based off your template and then acting a certain way. And then the people, we like manifest it, right? Like then we produce the reactions that we're looking at for or what we're expecting.
Yes, entirely. Yeah, that's entirely, entirely true. And then the other thing that was really interesting about the dynamic is that I created this, or I projected that I couldn't handle her reaction. Not projected, mm-hmm. like I believe I couldn't handle her reaction. I couldn't handle if she was going to be mad. So that's when I would go into like secretive mode. Mm-hmm. And there was so much that I wouldn't. I went on this, I opened a credit, like we had joint finances with everything. I like opened a credit card on my own and went and like bought $5,000 worth of clothes, like, and hid the whole thing from her. Mm-hmm. For like over a year. And then, but that was my mom, like I remember coming home from shopping and my mom would say, okay, put the bags in the car, dad's home. We can't carry the bags in until dad's not around. Okay, you know, only say that we bought two pairs of shoes, not four. So there was so much secrecy and I thought it was normal. And so I did all of that. And, the funny thing now is like she's not an angry person, like,
yeah,
at all. She got angry if I did like stupid shit like that. But then too, and back when it was really, you know, highly conflictual last year, the year before, when she would get angry, I couldn't handle it. I couldn't mm-hmm. handle the discomfort of her not being okay or not being okay with me.
Mm-hmm. Okay, give me three things that you like about yourself.
I like that I'm curious. Mm-hmm. I'm curious. I'm a curious learner. I love to learn. I like that I'm hopeful, and I like that I'm brave.
Do you like that you're the first person to have a cardboard cutout brother? So good. Does she still have it?
You know what? I was just thinking that. I bet she does. Yep.
Ah! Yep. I wonder where she got the idea from. So good.
I actually think it was from like coworkers. I think they helped her make it or something.
So
I don't
funny. So brought it to a wedding. That's the best. That's
like
the best.
Baptisms, like all the things. Yeah. Oh yeah. That thing traveled. That was like, and then people came to expect it. Like, oh my God. I think
so
he went
good.
To the beach too. I think he went to the beach. The funny thing is, I wasn't even like, I haven't even talked about that or thought about that
it's
story
so
in a long
good. It's so
time.
good.
I know. And like, I accepted that. Like, I just kind of thought that was, I mean, I knew it was fucked up, but like, I didn't know it was how fucked up. Like, I was even a little surprised by your reaction. I was like, oh, is that really that weird? Yeah, that is fucked up.
It's hilarious, though. It's so good. I love
it's
it.
Good. Yeah, it's good. And if she'd probably be really proud of it, too. I think she is proud of it. I think she'd be happy to
really?
Share. Yeah. Oh, 100%. Yes. Yes.
You should like get something like this, and you should like go out to like for one night at the dinner table and be like, "Dad's here." I'm sorry you guys couldn't make it. So good. Oh Lord. Okay. Hope or dream for the future.
Oh, I hope our democracy survives. Can I say that?
Sure.
Okay. I hope our democracy survives.
Thanks for this. I really appreciate your time.
It was really good to talk with you.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.